Welcome everybody to Consensus or Controversy, where our faculty tonight are going to provide insight into relapse and refractory multiple myeloma. If you haven't figured it out yet, I am not Dr. Neil Love. We are a little love-penic this evening, but we're very thankful that Neil is still watching over us as we speak. And my name is Dr. Joseph McHale. I have the privilege of serving as your moderator this evening, and I'm very grateful to share the stage with these three wonderful people. We have Dr. Nupur Rajay from Boston. We have Dr. Hans Lee, who is now explanted out of Houston and has made his way to Nashville, Tennessee. And of course, Dr. Thanos Demopoulos from Athens, Greece. We also have three other contributing faculty tonight. You'll see after each of our speakers that on the theme of consensus or controversy, we have a series of questions that we've asked our faculty here, along with these other three faculty, Drs. Callender, Sedana, and Martin, about their impression about various topics that you're going to hear a little bit about later. Now, these are also available to you. You'll see the questions as they come through, but they're available to you for download thereafter. So we have our typical accreditation information. I'm not going to read every word here, but it relates to the MLC statements, both by providing credit for physicians, for nurses, and for pharmacy credit. This is our disclosure and conflict of interest policy. And, of course, this relates to our planning and our peer review process to ensure that all is kept tonight so that we can provide CME. This is our policy with respect to disclosure of unlabeled use, because there will be some discussion of that tonight, as you can hear throughout. Now, importantly for this program this evening, there are no fees, but of course you have the opportunity to fill out your statement, your evaluation to be able to obtain CME credit, and there'll be more information to you provided tonight, as well as the email that you can reach out to here, meetings@researchtopractice.com. We're grateful for the commercial support as provided here and listed by the group of companies that have supported this evening. Our program, of course, is entitled Consensus or Controversy. Clinical investigators provide perspectives on the current and future care of patients with relapse and refractory multiple myeloma. So that, of course, is going to be our focus tonight. And we're blessed, as I noted, to have extraordinary faculty with us. We're going to have Dr. Nupur Rajay shortly come and talk to us about CAR T-cell therapy and how we use it in relapse disease. Dr. Hans Lee will then speak to us about integrating bispecific antibodies into the care of patients with relapse myeloma. And then finally, Dr. Thanos Demopoulos will look a little bit into the future with us and talk to us about antibody drug conjugates and cereblon E3 ligase modulators, also known as cell mods, in relapse multiple myeloma. So with that, I will turn it to my dear friend and colleague, Dr. Nupur Rajay, to bring us to CAR T-cell therapy. Queen Nupur, the stage is yours.
All right. Thanks so much, Joe. And thank you all for being here this evening. I'm going to be talking about CAR T cells in the next 8 minutes, I'm told. So we're going to go over this really quickly. And as you all are familiar, we have two CAR products which are approved in the CAR context of myeloma. We have idocaptogene as well as cilta-cel. And they are quite similar in terms of what they use for costimulatory domains. They use the 4-1BB. They target BCMA. I think the difference is in the epitopic binding. Cilta-cel has a biepitopic binding to the tumor cell. What we have right now is initial approvals happened in 4+ lines of treatment. These patients were had been exposed to an immunomodulatory drug, a proteasome inhibitor, and an anti-CD38. In 2024, we have expanded indications, so you can actually use CAR T cells quite early in the context of multiple myeloma, so that ide-cel can now be used after two prior lines of treatment, as long as they've seen an IMiD-PI and an anti-CD38, and cilta-cel just after one prior line of treatment, as long as they're refractory to lenalidomide. I just want you to go back to CARTITUDE-1. This was the first in human study of cilta-cel. It had a little less than 100 patients, 97 patients. And most recently, we have sort of the longest follow-up for the CARTITUDE 1 study. We have the updated progression-free survival and overall survival, which was presented at ASCO and is now published in the Journal of Clinical Oncology, and really, really superior results in patients who had been exposed to every possible treatment. We have 33% of these patients at a median follow-up of a little over 5 years remaining progression-free, and even the overall survival is about 60% in this patient population, and really no new toxicity signals with cilta-cel. Now, KarMMa-3 was the trial which got IDA cell approved earlier on. These were very heavily pretreated patients. Most of them were DARA refractory, close to 100%, and the majority of them were triple class refractory in this patient population. And when compared to the standard of care, just looking at the arm of the standard of care where the median PFS was 4 months, it tells you how heavily pretreated these patients was. With IDA-cel, there was a significant improvement with a PFS of a little over 14 months. This is the CARTITUDE 4 study. In this case, this was slightly early. Patients could have just had one prior line of treatment, and this was compared to the standard of care. In this case, was DARA pomalidomide dexamethasone or pomalidomide bortezomib and dexamethasone. And what you see out here is a significant improvement in progression-free survival, 30-month PFS of about 60 months, and an overall survival at 30 months of a little over 75%. We now have another CAR T cell targeting BCMA. This is anito-cel, and the difference here is it has a D-domain binding site, which was synthetically derived. It is a very small binding site, and because of that, the thought process is that the binding is very tight, and there's really no tonic signaling happening with this CAR product. We've seen excellent response rates with this, close to 100% response rates in all kinds of patients when it was used at the back end of myeloma, and this resulted in a progression-free survival of about 29 months. So really quite remarkable results with this anti-BCMA CAR T-cell drug product. We now have the iMMagine-1 study. This is the phase 2 study which has been presented at ASCO as well as at ASH. This is about a little less than 130 patients. They got anito-cel after the classic lymphodepleting chemotherapy. And what you see out here is an overall response rate of 97% with a stringent CR or a CR of over 60% in these patients. The 12-month PFS in this patient population is about 79%, and the 12-month overall survival was north of 95%. So really remarkable results. What about other CAR T-cell products in myeloma? There are other targets that we are investigating as well. This is our arlocaptogene autoleucel, which was tested again in the relapse refractory setting. The difference here is it targets the protein called G-protein coupled receptor, which is present on all myeloma cells. The primary objective here was to look at MTD and to identify the recommended phase 2 dose. If you look at the overall response rate of this, again, very high response rates with arlocel. At the recommended phase 2 dose, the overall response rate is more than 90%, and the median overall survival obviously not reached, and the progression-free survival of this patient population is close to 19 months. What was interesting here was half these patients had already been exposed to a prior BCMA targeting agent, whether it was an ADC, a bispecific, or CAR T cells, and yet you saw arlocel perform equally well whether you'd had a prior BCMA-directed strategy or not, with a PFS of a median of about 19 months. Again, again, if you look at the toxicity signal of Arlocel, the good news is with most of the CAR products we have for myeloma, the CRS and ICANS is really quite manageable, and we didn't see a whole lot of toxicity associated with this. The one few toxicities worth mentioning here are one of the neurotoxicities, mostly dizziness and cerebellar toxicity, which really happens at about 1 month post the CAR T cells. This happens in the minority of patients, and this was sort of the dose-limiting toxicity in the first in-human study when Arlocel was being tested in that setting as well. There are ongoing studies with Arlocel as of right now. We have the phase 2 quintessential trial. This is Arlocel in triple class and quad exposed patients using the recommended phase 2 dose. And soon to start is the quintessential 2 study, which is going to be the confirmatory phase 3 registration trial where Arlocel will be compared to standard of care in patients who've had 1 to 3 prior lines of treatment. Just a quick word on what has been done in earlier lines of treatment. This is Karma 2. These were patients who have relapsed after one line of treatment. And if you look at the overall response rate here is very high, translating into a PFS if you achieve a stringent complete response of close to 2 years in this patient population. Very similarly, Cilta-cel also has been studied in the CARTITUDE 2 studies, different cohorts, and I don't want to focus too much on the different cohorts, but it's early relapse after transplant or without transplant. Again, overall response rates of 100%. And this had led to our testing these CAR T-cell products up front. So we have CARTITUDE 5 in the transplant-deferred patient population and CARTITUDE 6 where CAR T-cells are being compared to an autologous stem cell transplant. So with that, I'll stop here and let you go through the conclusions. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Nipur. Very well done. Lots of great information squeezed into a perfect time set. So as we noted before, in the spirit of consensus or controversy, as I often say, if I put 10 myeloma doctors in a room, I have 12 opinions, right? So it's hard to get any consensus amongst us. But for this session, we have 6 questions. We're going to quickly look at 3 and have a bit of a discussion and then do the second set of 3. So we asked our esteemed colleagues here on the stage, in addition to those other 3 who are not physically present with us tonight, the question, approximately what proportion of patients with relapse refractory myeloma who are being cared for in the community-based clinics are good candidates for CAR T-cell therapy? Would you estimate are being referred? And you can see the spectrum here from the pessimist, Dr. Lee, to the optimist, Dr. Demopoulos. And we'll come back to this question in a moment. But I think it's interesting that any way you cut it, everybody is well below 50%. Regulatory and reimbursement issues aside, what is the earliest point at which you would like to access CAR T-cell therapy? Here we have near consensus, apart from Dr. Rajay out on the in left field, but appropriate field, where most of us felt that at first relapse, but Nipur, I'm going to come back to you in a moment and see your thoughts about using it earlier. And of course, you gave us the preview in a moment, a few moments ago, looking at CARTITUDE 5 and 6 for standard risk. At high risk, however, you're seeing that there is a greater interest potentially of using it earlier on. And then lastly, regulatory and reimbursement issues aside, for an otherwise healthy patient with relapse, to whom would you have decided to administer CAR T-cell therapy? Which one do you prefer? Do you prefer cilta-captogene autoleucel, also known as cilta-cel, or ide-cel? And you can see here that the majority, we all agreed in, for younger patients typically to use cilta-cel, but for older patients there was either no preference or a leaning towards ide-cel in a few patients. So maybe just going to that first question for a moment, Hans, that you answered a little bit differently from the group. Why do you feel that there are such a small number of patients eligible for CAR T who are actually getting referred in?
Yeah, I probably have a little bit of a unique perspective, being previously in an academic center, but now practicing in the community. And I think if you think about the number of patients referred for upfront autologous stem cell transplant, it's about 40% of patients. And so I think in terms of the number of patients actually being referred for CAR-T, for instance, second or third line, this number is going to be far lower at this point. So I think CAR-T is still gaining traction in the community and hopefully will increase as time goes on.
Do you foresee that number improving over time, though? Do you feel like the word is getting out? I'm sort of leading the witness here, Your Honor, but also that we may also be getting better at delivering CAR T cell therapy, making it more accessible and safer.
Absolutely. I think access is key. And I think one thing to consider CAR-T as is not a therapy for relapse disease, but almost as part of consolidation. And so you think about a patient who's on second-line therapy, essentially CAR-T4 was a study of CAR-T for consolidation. And so if a patient is responding well, we do know that CAR-T outcomes are actually superior than continuing on a triplet-based therapy. So that's probably the perspective that I would try to impart to the community.
Well, Nipur, you had commented that you might be interested in using CAR-T even earlier. I jokingly called you Queen Nipur, not prophetess. But if you are looking into the future, are you predicting that we are going to be using CAR-T in frontline therapy?
I do think so, because you have CARTITUDE-5, you have CARTITUDE-6. This is one of the most active treatments in multiple myeloma, and whatever works so well in the back end is going to work even better in the front end. So why wait for patients to relapse? I would use it up front.
And do you feel the same way, Thanos, with regards to giving us a European and Greek perspective here about using CAR-T earlier?
I think with the outstanding long-term results that show that even at the late phase of the disease, you have about one-third of the patients who remain without progression, and maybe some of them are cured. I fully agree with Nupur that this approach, realistically, should work better in earlier lines of therapy.
Yeah, I think that comment you made was so critical. That might have been one of the most impactful studies we've seen this year.
Yeah.
That one-third of patients on that CARTITUDE-1 trial, after a single infusion, 5 years later, are disease-free. I mean, it's even made us as myeloma doctors, who were so hesitant to ever use the word cure, start to think about how we define that a little bit more fully. Well, on the same notion of tolerability, we asked the question, based on published research data and your clinical experience, how would you indirectly compare the tolerability and toxicity of ide-cel and cilta-cel? And here, just about everybody said ide-cel was more tolerable, except for you, Dr. Demopoulos. Do you want to comment on this quickly?
Well, I mean, I think I was more influenced by the activity of cilta-cel versus ide-cel. But, in retrospect, I think, I would agree for older patients where, you want, better tolerability, and you are more tolerant to, less activity. Maybe ide-cel is the preferred product.
And I think if I can put an editorial comment here, I really do think this is a moving target. I think we are month by month learning. I often say there is no treatment of myeloma that we're using now the exact way it was introduced. Over time, we seek to increase efficacy and reduce toxicity by dose adjustment, by supportive care, by multiple other methods, and I think that's happening with CAR-T. We have a couple more questions here before we wrap up and move to our second section, which is, to what extent, if all, do you feel the elimination of the REMS, the risk evaluation and mitigation strategies requirements, will improve access to CAR-T? And maybe, Hans, I'll come back to you here for a moment, because, early on it was 8 weeks. Now it's down to 2 weeks where people can go back to driving and having more, and there are less restrictions on the center going through the REMS process. I know you said minimally here, but do you think there is going to be some benefit from this?
I think this is a moving target and will change over time. I think practically speaking, I think the barriers for broader CAR-T access still remain in terms of geography, referral patterns, et cetera, et cetera. I do think that having more or less restrictive driving restrictions probably helps patients access CAR-T more. I think ultimately from a practical standpoint, for instance, at our center, we're still monitoring patients for 30 days post-CAR-T infusion. So that still remains in terms of what we do internally from a safety standpoint.
And I think especially maybe for those patients that are traveling further, this may give a little bit of flex that you're not holding them on to much more beyond that month. And then our last question here is you know, Dr. Rajay beautifully presented the data from the Arlocap to gene autolysis study. If you were to have access to this, remember this is GPRC5D related or targeted a CAR T cell therapy. Well, would you like to have access to it? I mean, that's like asking a child, do you want another toy? I mean, we're always going to say yes as myeloma doctors, but in what context? And really, quite dramatically here, it seems that the majority of us are focusing on post-BCMA. And Nupur, I'll give you the last word here. Do you see that this is really going to be where it's located? Or would there maybe some patients you might even pre-BCMA think about using this?
You know, I think this is a completely different antigen, so I don't think we need to sequence it that way. I do think we are right now, with the way it's developed, we are thinking about using it after anti-BCMA related treatments. And the good news is the data for whether you've had prior BCMA or not still looks about the same. Once we start figuring out resistance mechanisms for BCMA-directed targets with our sequencing, next-gen sequencing assays, maybe we will pick patients and preferentially use a GPRC5D CAR. I hope that future is around the corner.
Excellent. Well, with that, we'll switch from thinking about CAR T to thinking about bispecific antibodies. I'll turn it over to Hans Lee. Thanks, Hans.
Thank you, Joe. So we're going to switch gears a little bit and talk about integrating bispecific antibodies into the management of relapsed refractory multiple myeloma patients. These are my disclosures. There's really been a transformation of the treatment of multiple myeloma over the last 3 to 5 years with the advent of T-cell redirecting therapies. And I think this graph really provides this type of context. So on the left part of the bar graph, you see the overall response rates in blue and the median progression-free survival of the key registrational trials that led to the approval of some of the legacy approvals just 10 years ago, including Pom-Dex, Carfilzomib-Dex, Daratumumab-Dex, and Selinexor-Dexamethasone. Again, overall response rates ranging from 25 to 30% and median progression-free survival of 3 to 4 months. And you fast forward, and now I'm highlighting in the red box the off-the-shelf T-cell redirecting therapies by specific antibodies. Now we have currently 4 approved. And now we're seeing unprecedented response rates of 60 to 70% with median progression-free survival exceeding a year. And notably with linvoseltamab, the median progression-free survival has still not been reached at a median follow-up of approximately 21 months. Now with bispecific antibodies, there are essentially 2 armed antibody. When one armed antibody binds to a tumor-associated antigen, and the other arm of the antibody binds to CD3 on the T-cell receptor, and hopefully leads to T-cell mediated killing of the myeloma cell. Now there's been a number of antigen targets studied with bispecific antibodies in multiple myeloma. I'm highlighting 3 here: BCMA, GPRC5D, and FCHR5. They are largely expressed on B cells and plasma cells, although there is some non-tumor associated expression on GPRC5D of, for instance, the hair follicle, the pupil and papilla of the tongue, which potentially could explain some of the on-target off-tumor toxicity. In terms of the biological significance, BCMA is significantly in terms of the growth and the survival of plasma cells, and they also have some differences in the extracellular shedding of the antigen target into the serum. To date, there are now 3 BCMA bispecific antibodies approved by the FDA: teclistamab, elranatamab, and linvoseltamab was just FDA approved in July of 2025, and Intentamig is currently in clinical development. Really across the board, we're seeing again unprecedented response rates for an off-the-shelf drug, 60 to 70%, with the majority of patients achieving a very deep response. CRS is common, but high-grade CRS is rare. And again, we're seeing very durable responses with all of these different drugs. Now, invariably, with bispecific T-cell antibodies, there is step-up dosing incorporated, where basically a small dose is given initially, intermediate dose is given as a second dose, and the target dose is usually given as the third dose. And this is relevant for teclistamab, elranatamab, and linvoseltamab, and they all have different step-up dosing schedules, as well as potential hospitalization requirements, as you can see for the package insert. And this has caused somewhat of a barrier to access to these bispecific antibodies in some contexts, particularly in the community. And so there's been a lot of work in terms of how can we improve the ease of administration of bispecific T-cell antibodies for patients with relapsed refractory multiple myeloma. And this is a very, very nice study performed at the University of Miami, presented at ASH last year, which looked at incorporating prophylactic tocilizumab prior to the first step-up dose of the bispecific antibody. And on the far right three bar graphs, you can see the incidence of CRS, and in red, incidence of grade 2 CRS for elranatamab, teclistamab, and talquetamab in the key registrational studies, again, exceeding 50%. With the incorporation of prophylactic tocilizumab, the incidence of CRS decreased to less than 15% with a very low incidence of grade 2 CRS. And so this has really led to changes into consideration of how we perform step-up dosing, and now prophylactic tocilizumab is listed on the NCCN guidelines as a consideration prior to the first dose of the bispecific antibody as of April of 2025. And this is actually being studied prospectively as well. And so there's actually a multi-center phase 2 study exploring all outpatient teclistamab step-up dosing with prophylactic tocilizumab in community oncology practices. And this is being done in the Sierra Canada Research Institute Network. And essentially, a patient gets tocilizumab prior to the first step-up dose. And the primary endpoint was incidence of any grade CRS in the first 2 cycles. And among the first 16 patients dosed so far, there's only been one case of CRS. And updated data was presented at SOHO yesterday. And among the first 24 patients, the incidence of CRS is still less than 10%, all grade 1. So there are some things to keep in mind when dosing with BCMA by specific, a particular infection. There can be both typical infections and opportunistic infections to be aware of. PGP prophylaxis is mandatory. Varicella zoster prophylaxis is mandatory. And there's also been a lot of data on the use of IVIG as primary prophylaxis to mitigate the risk for infection. And this is actually a nice paper published recently by Rahul Banerjee and Dr. Raji in Blood Advances, showing the benefit of IVIG as primary prophylaxis to mitigate the risk of infection. And this is really mandatory when administering BCMA bispecific antibodies. Now, there are several non-BCMA bispecific antibodies currently in clinical development. Talquetamab is now approved as of August of 2023. Again, this targets GPRC5D, and cevostamab, which targets FCHR5, is currently in clinical development. And again, a very high overall response rate with talquetamab in the Monumental 1 registrational study. And I think what was really, really interesting is that there was also very high overall response rates in patients who had prior exposure to prior T-cell redirecting therapies, including CAR T therapies and bispecific antibodies. Now, something to keep in mind is that because of the on-target, off-tumor related binding of talquetamab, there is some oral dermatologic adverse events to be mindful of. This is something that definitely is seen in most patients receiving talquetamab. And really the guidance is to really be aggressive once a patient achieves a response and reducing either the dosing frequency or the actual dose itself to mitigate this toxicity. Now, there's a lot of interest in how do we improve upon sort of the first generation approaches of the bispecific T-cell antibodies that we currently have approved from a regulatory standpoint. And there's combination studies now looking at, for instance, talquetamab, daratumumab and pomalidomide. This is data from the TRIM2 study that was presented at IMS last year. Again, most of these patients had actually been refractory to CD38-based antibodies, pomalidomide, and had prior exposure to BCMA-targeted therapies. We saw was a very high overall response rate and also durability response with this approach. And this is being studied in a randomized phase 3 study, the Monumental-3 study. There's also data with the combination of teclistamab and talquetamab. This was the first study evaluating the combination of two bispecific T-cell antibodies, again, targeting BCMA and GPRC5D. This was recently published in New England Journal of Medicine, again, the redirect one study, showing a very high overall response rate, particularly in difficult-to-treat subtypes of myeloma, including extramedullary disease. And finally, what is the future? And I think probably one of the most provocative, interesting abstracts presented last year at ASH was the Majestic-5 study. This looked at teclistamab in newly diagnosed multiple myeloma in combination with Dara-Len-Dex or Dara-VRd, and really showing unprecedented response rates and depth of response including 100% MRD negativity after 3 cycles of treatment among patients evaluable for MRD. And so again, compared to historical MRD data with PERSIS and ISCIA, it's really amazing to see such deep responses in this patient population. So in conclusion, these are some practical considerations of using bispecific antibodies in routine clinical practice. I think one thing to really be mindful of, again, is the adverse events management of CRS, ICANS. Again, really consider prophylactic tocilizumab to fill to outpatient step-up dosing. Again, importance of infection prophylaxis is for BCMA-targeted therapies. Again, we're looking at rational combination strategies. How do we maximize CRS mediation strategies? Again, I think what's the next in this field is, you know, potentially use of trispecific antibodies, again, for instance, with drugs like J&J-5322 and ISB-2001. With that, I'll conclude, and I'll hand it back to Joe.
Thanks so much, Hans. Again, lots of information. And like yourself, I'm quite excited at the end as you tucked in even to look at tri-specifics. But we're going to invite you to come back to SOHO next year when we'll have some consensus and controversy about that. But let's go through some of these questions that we asked the group. The first is a little bit more straightforward. If you have a patient who's not eligible for CAR-T, but eligible for a bispecific, which we do have, obviously, in clinical practice, how early do you want to use it? And Thanos, I'll turn to you here, that you're immediately willing to give it at second line, as most of the crew is here, obviously, if we didn't have restrictions. Do you have any hesitation about introducing bispecifics earlier into the disease course?
Well, I mean, I think since we are seeing significant activity later in the course of the disease, it is, I think, obvious or rather logical to see higher activity early on. And especially now that, as you said, we try to, you know, give, you know, these products less frequently to reduce toxicity and maybe for a fixed duration of time, I think it is appealing to use it in the second line setting, especially in the functional high risk patients, those that may have a relatively short remission after high dose therapy or continuous treatment.
And we're moving a little bit away from just this question, but Thanos brings up something particularly important, which is, you know, in literally all of these clinical trials, with a few exceptions, we sort of give bispecifics indefinitely. But yet he commented that there are some situations now we might be looking at, if not reducing the frequency, eventually even stopping them. Do you see that as part of the future strategy with bispecifics, that many of them would have a fixed duration, or do you think that's going to depend on risk status and response, or do you think we will be looking more towards a fixed duration of bispecifics?
No, I think, you know, rightfully pointed out, fixed duration is an unmet need in multiple myeloma. The beauty of these drug products is you get really deep responses. And if you think about the progression-free survivals with all of the bispecifics, what keeps those PFS arms up are the ones, the patients who achieve a complete response or are MRD negative. So after a certain time point, given that we have the tools such as MRD, which can help us sort of tailor therapy, I do believe we are going to go down the route of fixed duration of bispecifics. In the high-risk patient population, I think those would be the ones that I'd be a little hesitant. I think decreasing the frequency of how often we give the bispecifics is also incredibly important. As of right now, giving it once a week, you know, I don't even think we have enough T cells to engage. Why are we giving them weekly and every other week? So we can do less frequent dosing and certainly should be thinking about fixed duration.
Absolutely. And Hans, I think you made reference to it. I mean, most of us now are using much less frequent dosing than giving it every single week. All right, let's move to the next question, which is always a challenging one, which is, you know, based on the data experience that Hans showed to us, we have you know, 4 approved bispecific antibodies, 3 of which target BCMA. Can we really compare them? And there's a little bit of a difference of opinion here that most of us have said that the efficacy is about the same or not sure. Thanos, you've commented that Linvo may be a bit more effective, perhaps by the study that showed a 70% response as opposed to the prior ones. But any further comments about Linvo?
Well, you know, our experience being involved in levoseltamab studies with many patients, you know, we have been impressed that, we had to discontinue the drug because of toxicity, and we have several patients that are ongoing responses for months, many months, even without...
Even off therapy.
Even off therapy. You know, overall, I believe they're more or less, you know, active drugs. And I think now the challenge is to learn how to use them, how to space out the treatment, and how to deal with the toxicities.
Yeah, I think beautifully said. I mean, it's a bit of an embarrassment of riches, right? These are really three remarkable agents. And as we get more comfortable using them more safely, I think we're going to see even a greater efficacy. Now let's talk for a couple of minutes in these next questions about sequencing. I always say, you want to hold a myeloma meeting and have people come to it? Entitle it The Optimal Sequencing of Therapies in Myeloma, right? It's that unicorn that we all chase that we don't know. And so this question tried to look a little bit about asking, how would you sequence a BCMA target bispecific antibody and talquetamab for a patient with relapsed myeloma who had previously not received a BCMA CAR T? And there's quite a bit of consensus here that we would primarily go from a BCMA to talquetamab. And Hans, I wonder if you can comment on that. Do you think that's partly because that's what we've been doing? That's what the clinical trials have done. We saw that talquetamab can be very active even after someone is BCMA resistant. Or do you think there's more than that to it?
Yeah, I think that this probably speaks to perhaps the tolerability of BCMA-targeted bispecific antibodies versus talquetamab. I think the on-target, off-tumor adverse events with the oral, for instance, adverse events related to talquetamab can be challenging in some contexts. So again, rapid dose reduction and reducing the frequency of dosing is important for talquetamab. And so I think for that reason, probably I would lean toward BCMA-targeted bispecific antibody. Now, the one situation I might consider the opposite is, again, this particular situation, a patient has not had a BCMA-targeted CAR T therapy. If I'm thinking about that in the future, I might consider talquetamab initially, for instance, as bridging therapy or even holding therapy prior to perhaps instituting a BCMA CAR T in that context.
And I think, of course, often the answer is it depends, right, on the scenario. And we're learning that we can literally do all of these sequencing together. So similarly here, asking how would you sequence a BCMA-targeted antibody and talquetamab for a patient who had experienced disease progression after CAR T, and I think we're very comfortable now going to a different target of GPRC5D, and often going back to a BCMA BCMA targeted therapy. Nupur, are you comfortable going from BCMA CAR to BCMA bispecific? In what situation would you feel comfortable?
I'm the only outlier here, Joe, so I have to defend myself here. We do that all the time. And I think the difference between a GPRC5D and BCMA is you really do not lose BCMA on myeloma cells except in less than 3% of patients. The other thing is CAR T cells is a one and done thing. By the time patients relapse, on an average, it's after a year or plus. Most of these patients have BCMA. And the reason I picked BCMA bispecific even in that setting is exactly what Hans pointed out. You know, the toxicities of talc are very patient-facing. The toxicities of a BCMA bispecific are the infections which we can manage. So from a patient perspective, a BCMA bispecific tends to be way better tolerated.
I really like how you commented about that one-year phenomenon, because these questions can't fully capture that reality. And I agree with you. We have so many patients in our practice. We've given them a CAR T. They've gone 1, 2, 3, many 4 years and beyond. And really, the slate is fresh, and they do preserve BCMA. BCMA target is a very unique approach, a very unique target, and is one that is maintained after therapy. Based on your knowledge of available data, would you recommend preemptive TOSI for bispecifics? I bet you if I asked this question a year ago, there wouldn't be quite as many yeses. Serbi Sedan is not here to defend herself, but I think we're seeing this more and more. And Thanos, have you started to do this a bit more in Athens, where even off protocol, you're just giving TOSI? Should I send you the I Heart TOSI t-shirt? You know, where we use it preemptively and all?
Well, I think, it's not a bad idea, you know, limited dose of tocilizumab to prevent CRS, especially when there is a high tumor volume and the patients have a lot of disease. You would like to avoid that if possible.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think our fear of TOSI historically, and our PharmDs in the crowd, if we have some pharmacists here, and we love you, but we know you are the defenders of TOSI. I mean, this is like your baby that cannot be touched, and we recognize that there can be an expense, there can be some issues, inpatient versus outpatient, but I do think we're seeing, and there's some centers that have really gone to do this dramatically.
I think I just want to disagree with you.
Okay, please.
It should not be TOSI for all.
Right.
And if you look at the data with bispecifics, the rate of CRS in patients is about 60-70%, 20 or 30% of patients have high grade. Those are the ones who need TOSI. We've been doing outpatient step-up dosing for bispecifics using just steroids, and in a minority of patients using TOSI. And that's why I don't think we should generalize.
Yeah, and I think there's still equipoise there. I think we're still learning it. I agree. As a blanket for all, it may be overdoing it, but if we can select those who are going to have higher grade, absolutely. And then to conclude this section, which I think is remarkable that we all feel this way, and naturally we want to see things move earlier on. Hans, I'll give you the last word here because you presented some of this data, some very impressive data. As we think of both CAR T and bispecifics, if they've been that effective in late stage, we're going to be using them frontline, aren't we?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, based on the Majestic 5 data and other data that's coming out, I think we're seeing unprecedented response rates with bispecific antibodies in newly diagnosed myeloma as monotherapy or as in combination. And I kind of wonder, will the sort of millennial approach will be, not using the legacy drugs of lenalidomide and bortezomib, using these T-cell rejecting therapies for newly diagnosed patients?
I love how you make me feel old, Hans. Thank you very much. So with that, when you keep using the word legacy, I sort of feel like I need to step off the stage into a rocking chair. But let's turn to our final topic. In case you think the future of myeloma is only about CAR T and bispecifics, albeit very exciting, I'm very thankful, and that very few people on the planet can speak to these two approaches as effectively as Dr. Thanos Dimopoulos. So Thanos, come on up and talk to us about ADCs and CELMoDs.
Thank you. Okay, thank you for the opportunity to be with you here today. These are my disclosures. We have recently updated at EHA with EMN guidelines for the treatment of myeloma. And as you can appreciate, both for second line and third line therapy, we propose belantamab-based combinations. And this is primarily due not only to the unique mechanism of action of belantamab mafodotin, which is an ADC, antibody-drug conjugate, but also due to remarkable data from two prospective randomized trials, the DREAM-7 study, which compare essentially head-to-head belantamab to daratumumab with bortezomib and dexamethasone in the early relapse setting. You can see that the primary endpoints as the usual PFS, but also depth of response and MRD negativity. And this study showed that not only there was a significant advantage as far as PFS is concerned, coupled with a higher response rate and MRD negativity, but more importantly, there was an overall survival advantage in favor of the belantamab mafodotin arm. Furthermore, the DREAM-8 study was also conducted concomitantly, and this is a more realistic regimen because now we not only have patients who progress on lenalidomide, but we're seeing and we'll be seeing more and more patients progressing on anti-CD38. So in this particular study, the combination of belantamab mafodotin with pomalidomide dexamethasone was compared to PVD, which was considered as a standard of care at the time of trial design, and also a standard of care approved by regulatory authorities. And again, this study showed there was significant improvement of PFS. Overall survival data are not yet mature. However, there is a trend for an overall survival advantage and also a higher response rate. So with both studies, in early myeloma, we see a median PFS of about 3 years. Of course, and even more important is the fact that both in DREAM-7 and in DREAM-8, we have excellent results in patients with high-risk myeloma or for those who have an early relapse less than 12 months, and these are also difficult to treat patients. We all know that the major limitation of using belatamab mafodotin is the eye complications. It is associated with affection of the cornea. However, in with more experience and dose adjustment, we have about one third of patients that have visual acuity changes to 20/40, and this resolve in the overwhelming majority of the patients, and it was remarkable to see that the percentages were similar in both studies. Very severe affection of visual acuity, 20/200, is seen in a small percentage of patients. And with dose modification, which was directed according to the eye toxicity, we see that the essential administration of belantamab mafodotin was every 2 to 3 months. And in the frontline study, which has been designed to evaluate belantamab mafodotin in the frontline setting, it has been given every 3 months. There are ocular assessment by an ophthalmologist indicated for the first 4 courses, but I believe what is an advancement in the field is a clinical application by using a questionnaire at the clinic that will permit us eventually to adjust the dose without always to have a regular need for an ophthalmologic evaluation. Let's move now to another very interesting drugs. These are the CELMoDs, and I just skip several of the slides. We have iberdomide, we have mezigdomide, and we have data that indicate that iberdomide with dexamethasone can overcome resistance to both lenalidomide and pomalidomide. And also iberdomide has been evaluated as a maintenance drug in myeloma. It is well tolerated. It is better tolerated than lenalidomide without the gastrointestinal toxicities. And also there are studies which are evaluating iberdomide-based combination in the relapse refractory setting. Mezigdomide, on the other hand, has shown single-agent activity in about a third of the patients who have been resistant to lenalidomide and also to pomalidomide. And there are two studies that evaluate combination of mezigdomide with either bortezomib or with calfizumib, and these are associated with a significant response rate in these hard-to-treat patients. And finally, these are important studies, phase 3 studies that evaluate iberdomide as maintenance or in the context of the MIDAS trial or in the transplant-eligible patients. And the Excalibur, which is evaluating iberdomide and daratumumab with dexamethasone versus DVD in relapsed refractory myeloma. And finally, the two successor studies, which are evaluating mezigdomide with bortezomib and dexamethasone versus PVD, or mezigdomide, calfizomib, and dexamethasone versus calfizomib and dexamethasone. To conclude, belantamab mafodotin with two important combinations hopefully will be approved by FDA. They already have been approved by EMEA. And also we have the CELMoDs. Maybe iberdomide will be used as a maintenance drug, and mezigdomide with a very interesting mode of action in later phases, and maybe in the bridging strategy in between anti-BCMA therapies. Thank you.
Spoken like a pro, right on time. Thank you so much, Thanos. We are now going to come to our last set of questions and remind you that there's still time to submit questions online or in person. We've received some, and we'll get to some of them at the end of these discussions. So we've just heard this great presentation on belantamab mafodotin based on published data and clinical experience. Do you believe belantamab mafodotin should be clinically available for patients with relapsed refractory myeloma? That's pretty much a yes across the board, with one exception. And then the second half of the question was asking how many patients in your practice would you want to administer? So Nupur, I'll come to you. I mean, aside from the recent ODAC and some of the challenges of that discussion, how do you see us moving forward with belantamab? And maybe if I can ask you a little bit deeper, in those patients that you commented you would provide it to, who is that patient? Is that someone who's had CAR T, who's not eligible for CAR T? Where do you see it fitting in?
So at least in my practice, I tend to use it post CAR T cells and post bispecifics. The beauty of belamaf is it's easy to combine with. It's completely off the shelf. And I completely agree with Thanos. You know, it has to be dosed appropriately. You mentioned this earlier, Joe. We get drugs approved and then we learn how best to use them. This is a drug which cannot be used every 3 weeks, but more likely to be used every 8 to 12 weeks. We have clinical trials where we're doing it every 12 weeks and also doing it at a lower dose so that the ocular toxicity is really minimized. Again, a very easy drug to combine with a PI, as you saw in the DREAM studies, and with the immunomodulatory drugs. So I tend to use it after CAR T cells. I tend to use it after the bispecifics. Tend not to use it if I'm planning a BCMA-directed immune-based strategy before using belamaf.
Well, that's a good lead in to the next part of the question, which is, if it were to be available, do you believe we could avoid significant morbidity of the eye-related symptoms that were discussed by that dose schedule? And you can see some differences in our opinion. You can see that you and I are very much on the same page of that every 8 to 12 weeks. Thanos, is that how, if you were doing it off-study tomorrow in your patients, be it in combination, would you typically plan to give it roughly every 8 or every 12 weeks?
I believe it's important to have an adequate starting dose. I would not reduce the first dose. If I may, I would use the second dose on time and then try to, de-escalate. From a realistic point of view, and we have a lot of experience also in the frontline setting by developing BELRD, I think most of the patients will get it every 3 months. So realistically, this is the more appropriate way to do it.
So starting dose maybe 4 weeks later, and then roughly 8 to 12 thereafter.
Right.
Okay, great. I think a lot of us are in that same vein. And then lastly, on the Bella standpoint, of course, would you recommend it for patients who previously had both BCMA-directed CAR T-cell therapy and bispecific antibody? Meaning, do having those exclude you? And Hans, I wonder your thoughts here. You did say no, which is okay. I won't embarrass you for that because you could well be right. But are there contexts in which you would see that? Obviously, the question makes it a bit more simple than what you see in clinic.
Yeah, I mean, I think we do have a plethora of options for relapsed refractory multiple myeloma, so I'd probably lean to using a different antigen target, such as GP or C5D in that context. But to Nupur's point, at some point you're going to exhaust all your T cells with all these T cell redirecting therapies, and the nice thing about belimumab, it does not require sort of your endogenous T cells to exert this mechanism of action. So I think in that context, if you're convinced that the BCMA antigen is still intact, then I think that in that context, I think it would be potentially a good choice.
And I do, and I don't want to get too specific into it, and I know this is part of what we do in our lab in Phoenix, where we study, you know, that the ability to retain that BCMA target, we may be able to test for it a little bit more simply and easily in the future. But it is really remarkable how that BCMA target is retained, and I agree with you. I think the only other comment I might add to this is that there are some patients who just pragmatically are not going to be eligible for CAR T, and just functionally, it's going to be very difficult for them to bispecific antibody. I mean, I do think we'll be giving bispecific antibodies more easily in the outpatient setting and in the community setting in the future, but there are still some patients, and I can think of many patients in my practice who tomorrow, if it were easily available to give them an ADC, it would be very, very good for them, especially they may live far away or they may be particularly frail, and giving a drug, as Thanos, as you've said, every few months is really quite remarkable, especially if it's in combination with an oral drug like pomalidomide. So let's come to talk about a little bit about CELMoDs. I commented earlier, it's hard to get consensus from myeloma doctors, but this may be the most consensus slide of the evening, although we'll have to find a way to insert some controversy into it. But, I mean, obviously, we would love to see CELMoDs available. Thanos, maybe you could just talk a little bit more about the tolerability of these two drugs in particular. I know there have been some concerns about some of the neutropenia with mezigdomide, but again, like with every other drug we've talked about tonight, are we getting better at managing that, preventing it, dose adjusting, et cetera?
Absolutely. The lower dose of mezigdomide and also with iberdomide, we have a lot of experience within clinical trials by using iberdomide as maintenance, and I can tell you that for many patients, it may be easier to get one shot of G-CSF every week or every 10 days, that having the problems with the diarrhea that very frequently patients have on lenalidomide, especially after several months. So I believe that if I had to guess, that iberdomide will be shown to be more active and overall better tolerated than lenalidomide.
And again, I think you've answered this essentially this next question, which is not only better tolerated, maybe more effective, but you're comfortable in using it in patients who have progressed on immunomodulatory drugs. Is that fair? I know many of the early trials demonstrated
Absolutely. But
we're doing some trials. In fact, we're about to start a trial in Latin America where we're going to use it in patients who are naive to IMIDs. But in that IMID refractory setting, you're still comfortable using it.
Absolutely.
Well, this would not be a myeloma meeting if we didn't come to at least have one. And this is our final question that relates to MRD negativity. And again, there's consensus here. If you've been napping on and off, not that you could through this program, I mean, there has been repeated slides demonstrating the value and the predictive nature of MRD, that it may be able to very much not only give us a prognostic marker, but be able to influence the way we treat patients in the clinic and indeed design and implement clinical trials. And as many of you know, this ultimately was even brought to the FDA in the form of an ODAC to discuss it being an endpoint in clinical trials. And Nupur, I'll just get you to comment on this. You know, how important is this as a step forward to us in myeloma? Oh,
very, very important. And just to put some color to the ODAC meeting, for the first time we got a 100% vote for in favor of MRD. And the reason this is so important is with the combinations we're using, 100% of our patients are responding. And if we look at the quadruplets now, the median PFS is expected to be 17 years. If you want drug development to happen, you need to see an earlier time point, and that earlier time point would be minimal residual disease. So I think that's part of the reason why all of us are in favor.
In the spirit of the NFL starting tonight, it's like being able to predict at the end of the first quarter, you know, who's going to win the Super Bowl, which I guess we could do last year. no offense to Kansas City fans, but this is really something very important going forward. Well, it's hard to believe we're almost at our end, but before we jump to this, to my final comments, very quickly, we had one question come in, Hans, asking, When do you step down weekly BCMA bispecific antibodies? So do you do that at week 12? When do you typically do that if someone is responding?
Yeah, I'm pretty quick to de-escalate the frequency of dosing. I often follow a daratumumab-based dosing schedule. This is also very similar to how linvoseltamab is dosed. So weekly for the first couple cycles, and every other week for 3 to 4 cycles, and then once a month thereafter.
And I think that's what I've been hearing pretty much as consensus abroad. I want to take this opportunity to thank our wonderful faculty, and thank you for joining us this evening.
Thank you.